Hawkins. Bryant for the win.
Interviews from your favorite local coaches and athletes.
He's getting to the basket of will, and he's hitting that three-point shot with some consistency now, and he's just in a groove right now where he's pretty well unstoppable.
Hall of Fame and legendary guests.
I was driven by loving to play, liking the challenge of being an NFL quarterback, but after 18 years, I was 1 month short of 39 years old. It's time to go.
Analysis and insight on the latest national sports topics.
Sean Payton was horrible in clock management. That should never be the case with this New Orleans Saints team.
Well, we're waiting.
Live from the Auto Farm Studios, it's Drive Time Sports with Jordan Buscarini on KOAL 107.3 FM and 7:50 AM.
Welcome into a brand new week of Drive Time Sports. Live from the Auto Farm Studios, right here on 107.3 FM and 7:50 AM. I'm your host, Jordan Buscarini. I'm ready for a brand new week. We got some fun guests lined up throughout the week. But today, we're going to focus local, and then we're going to talk NBA basketball. A lot of basketball talk on tap today. I was thinking about this over the weekend. I feel as if we are getting close to potentially having to cancel the NBA basketball season. Now, the only thing that gives me hope is that South Korea is back to playing baseball, and I feel like that precedent has now been set. And if we can curb this whole pandemic that's going down right now, maybe we could get back to playing some sports in the next couple of weeks. But I do believe the NBA season is running out of time. Of course, that's speculation, and I don't want to focus on that today. What I do want to focus on is the epic historical 2020 Hall of Fame class. I'm going to go ahead and say it's the best Hall of Fame class we've ever had as far as the headliners are concerned, and there's been some great ones. But when you take into consideration that Kobe, Duncan, and Garnett have accumulated 11 championships between those three, and Duncan and Kobe appeared in every NBA Finals. It was either Duncan or Kobe out of the Western Conference for like 11 out of 12 years. And we're talking about close to 40 NBA All-Defensive Team honors between these three. It's hard to match that. Right? And I know that anytime Michael Jordan is associated with anything, we tend to put that to the top. But Jordan went in with David Robinson and John Stockton. Again, Jordan, one of the greatest to ever do it. David Robinson won championship. Look, Kobe, Duncan, Garnett, they all three won an MVP. You can't say that about Jordan, Robinson, and Stockton. You can't say that about that class. After that, Jerry West, Oscar Robertson, Jerry Lucas. Very, very close. But again, Jerry Lucas never won an MVP award. I think there's a couple of classes that are worthy of being in the same conversation. I mean, Karl Malone, Scottie Pippen, Dennis Johnson, Gus Johnson, that was great. But man, when you look at what Kobe, Garnett, and Duncan have accomplished, to me, it's the greatest Hall of Fame class we have seen going in to the Naismith Hall of Fame. I want to talk about that a little bit later on. We'll talk about the impact that these three guys have made. Here's another food for thought, because Duncan and Kobe will take all the clout. And Garnett, who was fantastic, probably gets overlooked a tad bit being next to Kobe and Duncan. The Garnett Celtics deal, the trade that Minnesota and Kevin McHale sent Kevin Garnett over to Boston, changed the landscape of the NBA. It really did. Even the Celtics today are still reaping the benefits from that KG trade when they eventually sent KG to Brooklyn. That was a game changer for well over a decade in the NBA. The day that Danny Ainge acquired Kevin Garnett, it resulted in one NBA championship for the Celtics. I'm not going to use the term only one championship, because I've heard that term thrown out a lot. Only one NBA championship? It's hard to win a title. It's hard to hoist the Larry O'Brien trophy. So when you talk about Kobe and Duncan doing it five times, it's even more impressive. KG has one. He's got an MVP to his name as well. We'll talk about that a little bit later on in the show. Some sad news coming out of Major League Baseball today. Hall of Fame outfielder Al Kaline has passed away at the age of 85. He earned the nickname Mr. Tiger for good reason. He was an all-star in 15 seasons. He was a 10-time Gold Glove winner in right field. He retired shortly after he recorded his 3,000th hit. That was back in 1974. And then he joined the broadcasting crew for the Tigers. And then he worked for the Tigers in the booth till around 2002. He did have his number retired. And then, of course, went into the Baseball Hall of Fame in 1980 on the first ballot. Now, the cause of death was not immediately known. But the Detroit newspaper did report that he had recently suffered a stroke. Again, it's a very sad day in Major League Baseball. Mr. Tiger himself, Al Kaline, passing away at the age of 85. We take a look at some of the other news floating around the national sports scene. And we did talk about UFC 249 a week and a half ago. Dana White has his replacement for Habib. Are we ever going to get to see Ferguson and Habib? At this point, it doesn't seem like it's likely. But Justin Gaethje has been named the replacement for Habib at UFC 249, which is still scheduled to take place on April 18th, so 12 days away. Dana White tweeted earlier today that it will be for the interim lightweight title. It is signed and 100% on. Again, a little bit of a downer considering that 249 was going to be an out-of-this-world pay-per-view. It was supposed to be held in Brooklyn as well, with Habib defending his title against Ferguson. But if you haven't paid attention to the UFC and why this fight isn't going to happen, the pandemic forced the UFC to change its plans. New York, it's been the epicenter of the COVID-19 in the United States, as far as all large gatherings in the state, many other places around the world as well. So there's been a lot of events canceled. Habib flew home late last month, and it's unknown when he's going to be able to get back into the country. Now, Ferguson lives in SoCal. He's number two right now in the division. It still should be an entertaining card, but it does lose a little bit of its lure without Habib on it. That's some of the big news coming out of the national sports front. The all-decade team in the NFL has been announced. There were eight unanimous selections, and that includes Tom Brady, J.J. Watt, Adrian Peterson, and Aaron Donald. Seattle had the most players on this all-decade team. Bobby Wagner, Earl Thomas, Richard Sherman, Marshawn Lynch, and also Pete Carroll. As far as quarterbacks, Tom Brady, Aaron Rodgers. Brady won three of his six Super Bowl victories during the last decade as well. Peterson, the only non-quarterback to win MVP honors in the last 10 years. He's on this team with Marshawn Lynch, Frank Gore, LeSean McCoy. Darren Sproles was a flex player and one of the punt returners as well. We'll talk about the NFL All-Decade Team. It gives us some fun NFL topics. Really, just a stellar squad when you take a look at it. I think sometimes you forget about the amount of talent that we have seen because sports is the ultimate what-have-you-done-for-me-lately type deal. But the All-Decade Team looks phenomenal. And again, as far as the defensive front is concerned, how about this? J.J. Watt, Aaron Donald, Calais Campbell, Cam Jordan, Julius Peppers, Geno Atkins, Fletcher Cox, and Ndamukong Suh. That's outstanding, isn't it? It's a Monday edition of Drive Time Sports. Coming up on the show here in just a few moments, we are going to be joined by Coach Ray Jones Jr. He was recently named the head coach for the Pinnacle Panthers. We're going to talk about him making the jump from USU Eastern over to Pinnacle. And again, we're going to highlight the 2020 Hall of Fame class in the National Basketball Association. That's all coming up right here on this Monday edition of Drive Time Sports. We are live from the Auto Farm Studios.
Now, this local Castle Country sports update with Jordan Buscarini from KOAL.
Reporting from the KOAL newsroom, I'm Jordan Buscarini with a look at local sports. And it was reported last week that USU Eastern will be in search for a new men's basketball coach. After 8 years at the helm, USU Eastern will look to replace former head coach Al Giampicelli. The search is officially underway as the job was posted on Thursday. Last week on KOAL's Drive Time Sports, we were joined by Associate Vice President Greg Dart, and he talked about the announcement of looking for a new basketball coach.
The search is right in its infancy. It was just posted on our website, jobs.usu.edu, and we are right in the middle of a nationwide search for a new head men's basketball coach. The first time that we've been in this position in 8 years, and we wish Coach Vanda the best in his next endeavors, and then Coach Jones moving on to Pinnacle, and we couldn't be more excited for him. And now's the time for the next stage in this program that's got a lot of history and a lot of upside.
The nationwide search is expected to include seasoned coaches, familiar coaches, and also up-and-comers. Dart continued by talking about the excitement of seeing the amount of interest already garnered for the USU Eastern men's basketball position.
Catch that lightning in the bottle up-and-comer coach that maybe has been at the high school level, maybe who's been just young and not quite the same experience, but is going to be the next great coach. You then look at the coaches who might know this conference really well, who might have been assistant in another institution or tied to our program or, you know, whatever, and understand the grueling nature of what this conference basketball means. And then you've got these seasoned coaches that have, they might have been a head coach at a D1 institution, the pinnacle of college basketball, and they're interested in coaching here in Price, Utah. That's exciting. And so when you start looking at all the different types of coaches, when it's all said and done, we will have a lot of really, really qualified applicants that can do amazing things.
The position is expected to remain open for the next 2 weeks. At that point in time, a hiring committee will go through the process of selecting its new men's basketball coach. Stay tuned to Castle Country Radio. We will have more on the USU Eastern men's basketball coaching vacancy as the information becomes available. Now, speaking of USU Eastern basketball, it was reported last week that former assistant coach Ray Jones Jr. had accepted the boys basketball position at Pinnacle High School. Jones will also teach at Pinnacle in physical education, and he'll also now oversee the baseball and track and field programs. Today on KOAL's Drive Time Sports, we'll be joined by Coach Jones. We'll talk about making the transition from junior college to high school, and also the 2020 fall program of baseball. Again, that'll be today on KOAL's Drive Time Sports. And as we continue to go through a lull with no local high school, junior college, or middle school sports, make sure you visit CastleCountryRadio.com. Over the past 2 weeks, we have recapped the spring sports season with recaps for baseball, softball, golf, and soccer. This week, we'll feature a quick recap of the Carbon High School tennis season, and then we'll begin to recap the winter sports season for both Carbon and Emory. You can find more news, sports, and community events at CastleCountryRadio.com. Reporting, I'm Jordan Buscarini.
What you listening to?
Big Sports Radio Guy.
Prepare the water cooler, that we may gather around it later and discuss things.
It's time for the Coach's Corner on Drive Time Sports.
We're back on Drive Time Sports, live from the Auto Farm Studios, 107.3 FM and 7:50 AM. Let's talk local sports. It was reported last week that Coach Ray Jones of the USU Eastern basketball squad was making the jump from JUCO over to 1A High School, the new head coach of the boys' basketball program, also baseball and track and field. We did talk to athletic director Mark Stuckenschneider last week, and now we're going to talk to Coach Jones and get his perspective on the jump and what lies ahead for the Pinnacle boys' basketball program. Joining us right now over the phone, we have Coach Ray Jones. Coach, I always look forward to the conversation. Thank you again for joining us today.
Oh, as always, man, sitting in a different seat now. Still the same Jordan, though, so it's awesome.
Yeah, we still get to continue our basketball talks, which is a good thing. Coach, it was first reported last week that you're going to be making that jump from USU Eastern going over to Pinnacle. So you're changing from JUCO to high school. First question, why was this the right move at this particular time for you?
Oh, man, I'm just a bunch of, you know, sometimes life just brings changes. And, you know, my mama told me the only constant in life is change. And so sometimes it can be a really good thing. And so as everything is going on, I had to look back. I just got engaged. She comes with two children, the stability, just the opportunity to mentor young men and young women as well, whoever's there. So I think that's kind of the determining factor. It's just the opportunity is one that I couldn't really pass up.
Is it difficult for you to leave the college ranks? I mean, you have such a very decorated resume. You know, if we go back to your time at Southern Utah under Coach Todd Simon and then coming over here to USU Eastern, of course, your playing days at SUU and your playing days at JUCO. College basketball has been such a big part of your life. Is that going to be difficult to walk away from?
That is one of the more weird, interesting parts of it. I tell girls, I ain't been in high school for a long time, but It has been such a big part of my life. I mean, you think about, you know, like you said, Southern Utah, Connor State, coming back to SUU, working for Nick Robinson, and then working for Ty Simon, and having such a good relationship with Roger Reed, who was my college coach, and all these college coaches that I've come to get in relationships with. And now all of a sudden it's like, you know, we're not on the same level anymore. You know, it's an interesting feeling, but it's going to be fine, and I'll definitely be around, but I'm excited for this new venture.
I'm definitely excited as well. And you come to Pinnacle High School. It's a basketball program. We'll start by talking about basketball because that's what you're known for, right? So it's not exactly a basketball program that has had a ton of success, although there has been some great athletes come through this program.
Yeah. It's when you look at back at the pedigree of it, there's been some great coaches that come out of it after their time there, and some great players that come out too, especially for the 1A league and everything that they've been able to work within Pinnacle to upgrade it and keep moving up. I love the trajectory. I mean, listening to Roberta and Mark and listen to how the vision that they have. I'm just excited to be a part of that process, man. Eric Hansen did a phenomenal job of pushing it up to another level, and now it's just exciting to take the reins and say, man, I got you from here. I'll push it up. Try to push it up a little bit more based on what you did.
You're so used to taking kids, again, coming out of high school, preparing them for that JUCO, and then, of course, the D1, D2, D3 level. But now you're prepping high school kids for potentially a career once they get past high school. So have you started to think about the adjustments that you may have to make in taking a kid that is 15, 16, 17 years old compared to taking a kid that's 19, 20 years old?
Yeah, and, you know, the cool thing about coming from JUCO is the fact that I get to see some of the things that I had to teach. I mean, you take defense, for example. You take help side or something like that, or forcing the baseline, and you say, yo, did y'all not learn this in high school? Right? You don't know how many times we had to say that. Like, y'all didn't learn this in high school, and now for me to be able to go to the high school level and teach them the things that we learned as far as fundamentals and basic principles. Now when I got to college, it was like, coach, I already know this stuff. Let's move on to the next thing. Let's go. You know what I'm saying? So now we can push the pace. That's what we want to do, is put them in a position to learn as much as they can. So if they go to the next level, it's like, coach, we already got it. We know this part. Let's move on.
Yeah, we got to see you coach lead USU Eastern throughout the last couple of weeks of the season, but now we finally get to see your imprint on an entire basketball squad over the longevity of a season. It's so much different than what we just saw you come out of at USU Eastern. And so I guess my question to you is, 1A basketball really has here in this state, they have that reputation for pushing the ball up the court and scoring a lot of points. Is that kind of your mentality going into it, or do you want to slow the game down, maybe keep these games a little bit more low scoring, slow the pace in general? What's your thought on that?
Well, I think for me, it all starts on the defensive end. I know that sounds cliche, but defensively, we want to do such a good job that we make teams work so hard that we can push the pace based off of their mistakes and their lack of conditioning. Because what people don't understand is defense wears teams down. So if they think they're in shape, but they have to move the ball around and they're constantly having to dribble and pass and dribble and pass and dribble and pass, all of a sudden we get to push the ball and they're going to be tired catching up with us and then tired working to score as well. And so it all starts with defense for me and just this determination to make people work for everything. And now offense is like, guys, if you can score in the first 10, 15 seconds, let it go. If it's a good shot, let it go. If not, we'll work it around. We'll get the best shot. And that's kind of been my philosophy my whole entire career. And I think it'll carry on to Pinnacle too.
Yeah, there's no shot clock in high school basketball. That's going to be a big difference.
Yeah, and some of that is adjustment. So that's the tricky part is I play with a shot clock most of my life, obviously, because I ain't been in high school forever. So once you get to, you know, Division One, and you know, all of a sudden everything's a shot clock from then on. So that'll be an adjustment, but, you know, that life is full of adjustments. So we'll make that one the same way.
No question. Before we move on from the basketball aspect of this announcement, let me ask you, what did you learn most at USU Eastern as an assistant coach? Maybe something that helped you kind of refine your coaching style. Maybe it's just knowledge of the game. Maybe it's dealing with people. What did you learn most while you were at USU Eastern?
Man, there's so many things. I'm getting this thing into one. Oh, Lord. Really what refined the most is understanding how the importance of bringing a philosophy that isn't based on just action, but based on what you are. And what I mean by that is, if I can give the players myself, and I'm a hardworking coach, and I'm a loyal coach, and I'm a trustworthy coach, and I'm a loving coach, and if I'm all these things encompassed into a person, what comes out of my mouth is going to resonate with them better than just what I put on a board. And that's one of the things that refined most with me is everything is relational. So if I give them hard work, if I show them how hard I work, when I demand it from them, they'll bring it. If I show them love, when it's time for them to have to love me and respect the decision I make, they'll respect it for the most part. And that's not always true, but I mean, that's kind of one of the things that I've refined throughout the assistant coach position is that relationships are important and practicing what you preach is very important too.
Again, our guest right now is Coach Ray Jones Jr., head coach of the Pinnacle Panther Boys basketball, baseball, and track and field squads. So let's talk about baseball, because that's going to be the first sport out of the gate for you. Baseball, of course, at the 1A level is a fall sport, not spring, like 2A through 6A. And so right out of the gate, it's kind of a new realm for you.
Yeah, man. Baseball, that's an interesting thing when they ask me. It's great because baseball was actually my best sport growing up. So it was actually my favorite. And I switched to basketball later on towards 6th, 7th grade. And but I have a lot of love for the game. And obviously something to learn. You know, the game evolves every couple years. And so, I mean, obviously I'm a little behind the curve, but that's a part of it, man. You got to learn, and I want to be educated. I want to be able to put these boys in the best position to be successful. So ultimately it's about them, not about me or my accolades or getting trophies for myself. It's about what we can present so they can be able to be as successful as they can.
What about track and field?
Track and field. I ran track in high school and middle school as well. I did the 400, did the mile, did the 800. I did cross country. So that one I'm a lot more familiar with because it was a little more recent. And, I mean, obviously we had to run our whole lives in basketball or track anyway. So a lot of this is that one's fun too. And so obviously I'm going to have great help. Mark, the AD, is presenting a ton of help for me. And I think we'll be able to put something together to make these boys and girls be successful.
I know that right now there's just a whole lot of question marks. We don't know when things are going to get off and rolling. But as far as rounding out a coaching staff for you, what type of I guess, leash do you have on that? How much are you able to really expand? I know we're talking about a 1A school, but are you allowed to kind of add to your staff and put people around you to help you out in coaching positions?
Yes, sir. And that's the cool thing about Roberta and Mark. I mean, they give so much of, I won't even say a leash, because it really feels like it's just open grazing. I mean, they've allowed me to be able to dictate who I want to bring in, who or what I want to do, and just mainly what I want from that person or those people. I imagine there'll be two, one or two. It's just the ability to bring enthusiasm, and one of them will probably be younger. I've already talked to a young man, and so, I mean, one of them will probably be younger. And I want him to learn as much as he can, be involved, not be afraid to take risks. Give input, you know, all the things that I learned from being able to be active and being an assistant. And so I think that'll be a cool part, too, to be able to mentor players, but also mentor an assistant coach or two assistant coaches and a manager or whatever. I like that part of the equation as well.
Yeah, when you talk about managing or mentoring, in the same token, these are student-athletes, right? They're students first, and now you're going to be in the classroom as well, which is just another fantastic aspect to this new adventure for you.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. And, cause, you know, once again, that goes back to just being the head of it now is, you know, all those things come under my watch now, right? And then that's going to be probably kind of the most fun part of the challenge is actually taking on this idea of this is now my ship, you know, and everything that happens under my watch is on me. And that's a different thing going from an assistant to a head. But I'm excited. I'm so excited for that challenge. And that opportunity, I'll say opportunity more than challenge.
Yeah, this may be a very vague question, but we can end with this. In talking to Mark Stuckenschneider, athletic director, last week, he says that he's always prided himself on having a great relationship with USU Eastern. You obviously have that connection right there. So have you began to think about how USU Eastern and Pinnacle can work together and help out one another? Is that something that you've given any thought to at all?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Because, I mean, like I said, I'm relational. I mean, first and foremost, it's about the people. And so I've thought of ways that we can, you know, get the players to, you know, come to a USU practice and get to see what another level of work is. You know, I remember being in high school, and we drove all the way to Fayetteville from Little Rock, which is about a 2.5-hour drive, just to watch them practice. And this is when Patrick Beverly was there. And I got to see the amount of just how good they are and how hard they work. And I was like, guys, you're trying to go to college. This is what we have to be? Oh, my goodness. You know? And then having the team talk to them, be like, you got to get your grades. You got to do this. Coming from people that are in a bigger position than you and a bigger platform, that means a ton. So I think there's plenty of things like that we can work back and forth with that USU Eastern can help these young men just as much as I can, and we can push these young men to USU Eastern and give them some focus and something to look at that they can run to. That's baseball, that's basketball, that's track, that's volleyball, that's anything that exists that they can run to and say, this is going to push us up.
Coach Ray Jones, again, at the Pinnacle Panthers basketball, baseball, and track and field. Coach, I'm definitely excited for the new adventure. Congratulations on what's next for you. Congratulations on the engagement as well. It's always fun to get you on the show, and I look forward to many more conversations in the future.
Hey, man, thank you so much, Jordan. And, you know, the date is set for August 8th. You know, we have to do Kobe just for you. But now we're excited, and I appreciate everything that you've done. You've been an awesome friend, and I look forward to more conversations and more radio interviews.
Oh, I definitely will too, for sure. That's Coach Ray Jones Jr. of the Pinnacle Boys basketball, baseball, and track and field squad. Again, you can get the complete press release of Coach Jones joining Pinnacle at CastleCountryRadio.com. We do have more Drive Time Sports coming up. When we return, we're going to move over to the national scene. We'll talk about the historical 2020 Hall of Fame class that features Kobe Bryant, Tim Duncan, and Kevin Garnett. That's coming up next here on Drive Time Sports.
Oakland-born Damian Lillard.
Now, what a second season for Damian Lillard.
Last year's Rookie of the Year, an All-Star this year.
It's Lillard. He got the shot off. Lillard got it! Good! And the Blazers win the series for the first time in 14 years!
This is Damian Lillard from the Portland Trail Blazers, and you're listening to Drive Time Sports with George Buscarino on KOAL 750 AM.
It's time for more basketball talk here on Drive Time Sports. Some big news coming out last week. The 2020 Hall of Fame class was announced. And in my mind, it's the best ever. Tim Duncan, Kevin Garnett, and of course the late, great Kobe Bryant, a part of this year's 2020 Naismith Hall of Fame class. Joining us right now to talk Hall of Fame classes in general, plus going over the three main names in 2020, we have Jameson Welsh, our NBA analyst. Jameson, it's always a pleasure to get you on. I'm looking forward to today's conversation. Thank you again for the time.
Oh, not a problem. Thanks for having me today. Definitely appreciate it.
I know you share the same sentiment as I do. This is the best Hall of Fame class we've ever seen.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, it's the only class that has everyone that, you know, the players have won MVP. And then also, it comes at a time where these guys kind of redefine the game. Like, you look at how the game is played and, how guys were coming into the league and whatnot. I mean, you have Kevin Garnett, who came out of high school. He made it cool for teams to pick a high school kid. Kobe Bryant became the first guard to come out of high school and get selected in the lottery. You know, that's something that wasn't, you know, there's teams at the time, they're like, no way, we're not drafting a guard that's coming out of high school. It just wasn't possible, but he made that possible. Then Tim Duncan, he's the guy that he was kind of the last great top 4-year college guy that came in the league. And then, you know, bigs tried to, a lot of the back to the basket bigs, he wanted to try to be like Tim Duncan because he was a guy that could do it all. From that position. So there's a lot of great characteristics for those three guys. But to me, those are the three best guys as a collective to be inducted into the Hall of Fame.
Yeah, there's some great classes outside of this year. Don't get me wrong. I mean, someone would bring up Michael Jordan, David Robinson, and John Stockton. Yeah, that's a terrific class. Don't get me wrong. It is terrific. Jerry West, Oscar Robertson, and Jerry Lucas. Again, that's a terrific class. But as you mentioned just a moment ago, we're talking about three headliners that all three won an MVP, and there's 11 championships between this group, which is astonishing when you think about it. I mean, even going back to the Michael Jordan, David Robinson, John Stockton, we're looking at 7 championships there. There's 11 championships between three guys. It's incredible. And then if you dig even a little deeper, you take a look at how many times Tim Duncan and Kobe Bryant were on a team that represented in the NBA Finals. It's even more mind-boggling, Jameson.
I'll do one better, Jordan. How many all-defensive teams were these guys on? Like, that's what gets left out of the conversation. Like, everyone talks about offense and scoring and whatnot, but the greatest impact a lot of these guys have had in their careers on the other end, the defensive end, especially the two big guys. Like, their defensive prowess is really understated. It doesn't get talked about as much. It's really unfair, especially to a guy like Garnett. Like, Garnett was kind of ahead of his time. Because if he's your center nowadays, when everything's pick and roll and you have to chase guys on the perimeter and hold drawn that way. Like, he'd probably be the best player in the league just based off of his ability to do everything on the court without, like, hesitation. It would be very difficult to run pick and roll and run your offensive sets with him blowing up everything. And then when he could go on the offensive end as well, he'd be a monster. But no, he's kind of ahead of the time. If he was born 5 years later, he'd probably have a different conversation. But no, it's amazing, Jordan. You have all three of these guys were stellar defensively as well as offensively, and I think that's the key. That should get mentioned more often because the game, at the end of the day, you got to stop your opponent from scoring, or you have to make it as hard as possible for your opponent to score. And these guys did it for a very long time, and that doesn't get talked about as much.
Oh, that's a great point. I think Kobe has 9 NBA all-first defensive nods. I believe he had 3 all-second-team nods. I think Garnett was actually the same at 9 and 3, and then Duncan was 15 times between all-NBA defensive squad, first and second teams. And you mentioned the big guys, and yes, that absolutely does get overlooked. But I also think the defensive prowess of Kobe Bryant gets overlooked as well. And a lot of this has to do with the fact that we've seen him drop 50 points 4 consecutive games. We watched him score 35 points a season. He's a 2-time scoring champ, right? He's got 5 championships. He's got one of the most decorated careers that we have seen. We don't talk enough about how good this guy was on the defensive side of the floor as well. There was a time where he was the most elite scorer in the league, and you could have made the argument he was the best perimeter defender in the league as well. You haven't been able to have that conversation with too many people over the last 20, 25 years in the league.
Very, very difficult as a conversation to have. You could argue one of those Heat, I think the second Heat year, that maybe the third Heat year, LeBron was that guy. You can make an argument for Kawhi, but he just doesn't play enough games for most people. So very few people that can have that. Of course, Michael Jordan back in 88, where he averaged 38 and won Defensive Player of the Year. But that's a very select few. Those are 4 of the best perimeter players ever. I think Kevin Durant is a very good defender, and he has his moments where he's the best defender in the world, but it's not as consistently as you would like. So, yeah, this is a very select group that has that capability, and all those guys we mentioned are going to be first-round Hall of Famers or already have been. So this is one of those situations where very few are able to get 25, 30 a night, and then really lock in on the other end to stop you. But also remember, think about Kobe defensively. He set the tone for the Olympic team when they played in L.A. That was a huge deal because international basketball is different. It's more physical. The game is played differently. The whole thing, it's a total mind switch. And he was like, you know what? Everybody here can score. Everybody here can score the basketball. I'm going to start this, let's lock up defensively. That's where we're going to win, and that's how they won. They didn't have the greatest of offensive teams, numbers-wise, but they got a lot of steals, got out in transition, got a lot of easy buckets, and that led to everything else.
I'm glad you brought that up, because I've had this conversation on the show multiple times, and I hope people really one day, I hope it's not lost on Kobe's legacy, because Kobe was damn proud of what Team USA had accomplished in 2008. And if you go back to 2006, it was not a great time for our international play. And if you talk to Coach Krzyzewski, if you read interviews, if you've read stories from Jerry Colangelo, look, Kobe Bryant is a huge part in where Team USA basketball is today. Without Kobe Bryant, I have no idea what 2008 or 2012 looked like. And I hope that's something that does not get lost on his basketball resume.
Well, 08 for sure. 2012, not so much. I think 2012's team is a little bit better overall, 1 through 12.
But 8 set the stage. 8 set the stage. Without 2008, we don't have 2012.
Yeah, well, it depends. If they lose in 2008, the same guys still come back and try to win it. However, that team in 2012 was, we look back at it like, okay, this team is pretty solid. But no, I get what you're saying. Like, the mindset, it all comes from the mindset and standard that is, created. And, 08 definitely helped with that. But they weren't, all those guys, him, LeBron, Wade, and the rest of those guys, they weren't going to, during their peak and prime, they weren't going to allow another country to win a gold medal. That just was not going to happen. I don't know what's going to happen going forward. We don't have that guy going forward. There's not that guy that says, you know what, it's on me. Just don't have it. It's not there. It's unfortunate, but that's kind of where we are right now. Just looking at the whole situation, just look at the league. We don't have that one player, that one guy that says, you know what, I'll take this challenge. I don't care. I'm not worried about the publicity or the marketing or whatever. I want this. We don't have that guy right now. That may change by the next Olympics, but as of right now, we don't have that guy.
Again, Jameson Walsh right now, our guest, as we talk about this stellar Hall of Fame class of 2020. Jameson, I brought up the amount of finals, the amount of times that Kobe, and we can throw Kevin Garnett in there and Tim Duncan as well, represented a team in the NBA Finals. Every time KG was in the NBA Finals, it just so happened it was up against Kobe Bryant. He went twice, finishes 1-1. If you go back to 1999, when San Antonio beat the Knicks in five games, from 99 to 2010, all but one NBA Finals had Kobe Bryant or Tim Duncan in it. I mean, that is unbelievable when you put that in perspective. And the only year, it was 2006 with Miami and Dallas. Outside of that, for almost a solid decade, we had Kobe Bryant or Tim Duncan in the NBA Finals.
And the reason why 06 didn't happen is because Ginobili had a really bad foul at the end of that, and then the fourth quarter that took the game in overtime. But yeah, like you're exactly correct. And that kind of shows you who ran the decade. I mean, you know, Kobe, especially in the beginning of the decade, when him and Shaq were together, they were impossible to beat. And then, you know, like most teams do, when you have a long run, at the end it gets kind of choppy because, you know, legs are tired. You only have so many games you get up for. Happens to everybody, no matter. I mean, we just saw it happen with the Warriors last year. Like, eventually, no matter how good you are, how good your roster is, you only have so many games in your leg before things go the wrong way. And that's what happened last year. It happened in 03 and 04 with the Lakers. But with that being said, Kobe was able to win two championships with a very interesting group of cast members, because a lot of people like to bring up the good parts of these players, but no one else brings up the flaws. And I love Lamar Odom. I love him like a family member. However, he will have two 20-10 games in a playoff series and then follow up with like an 8-6 game. And it's like, all right, so what's really going on? So, I mean, I'm not going to downplay any of these guys because they all play their parts. But there was some inconsistent play amongst the supporting cast on that second go-around of getting to the finals three straight times that no one likes to bring up. And it's very unfortunate because Kobe, for a guy that wins that won back-to-back titles, his back-to-backs don't get talked about as much. They really don't. That's kind of unfortunate.
No, I agree with you. I agree with you 100%. And when you take into perspective how Kobe did it, okay, and again, this is not a knock on Tim Duncan at all. You cannot use this against Tim Duncan. But the fact of the matter is, the San Antonio Spurs were ran a different way. That organization just had a different feel around it. Okay, so what I'm meaning is Tim Duncan did his damage with the same core. When you take a look at guys, elite players in the NBA, how many have won multiple championships in back-to-back stretches with completely different cores as one of or the best player on the team? That's something I don't think gets enough credit as well, Jameson. So when you bring up that supporting cast that Kobe had in 2009, 2010, let's also look at the fact that that was a completely different cast than what he had at the beginning of that decade. That's important as well.
All of you were better, Jordan. What happened to Andrew Bynum 3 years later?
Out of the league.
There you go. What happened to Lamar Odom 3 years later?
Out of the league.
I can go with Shannon Brown, Jordan Farmar, Sasha Vujicic. You get the trend, right?
Yep.
You get the trend, right?
Yep.
You see where this is going, right? And that's how it was. I mean, it's funny that everyone likes to view the positives of players. But you also look at it the other way, too. If you're going to analyze the situation, you got to look at the good and the bad. And like I said, everyone wants to argue who's a better player. I'm not a big arguer. Especially when it comes to that, because there's no really right or wrong answer. Everyone's going to feel how they feel. But I think that people should consider the full picture before presenting their argument. I'll just put it that way.
Oh, I'm with you. I'm with you 100%. We haven't talked a lot about KG during this stretch, and I also think it's very important that, look, the Boston Celtics are in a position where they're at, even to this day, because of the deal that Danny Ainge pulled, preventing KG from going to the Lakers and bringing him to Boston, right? That particular trade cannot be overlooked as to what it did for the Celtics even to this day and age. Even when Danny Ainge pulled a heist and sent KG out of Boston over to Brooklyn, that day that Ainge pulled the trigger and brought KG to Boston, it was a game changer for now almost, a decade?
So here's the thing with that trade. No one talks about that, but that was a buddy-buddy trade.
It was.
We have Kevin McHale just gifting KG. Like, what? And then if you look at that trade wasn't that good. Like,
nope.
You look back at what was given up, and that trade was really bad when you come to think about it. However, that being said, You know, it is what it is. But I do agree with you that that trade, I mean, it saved the Celtics. It saved probably Danny Ainge's job. Because if he doesn't land that trade and they still go young with the draft picks and stuff, he probably end up trading Pierce and he loses his job in a year or two. So you are correct. That trade literally changed the whole NBA because that made the Celtics power, that weakened the Lakers at the time, weakened the Suns, who were in the process of trading for him, or the Warriors at the time, who could have traded for him. So a lot of different things could have happened. And when the Celtics got him, it changed a lot of things. Hell, changed the power shift in the East, because if the Celtics don't get him, the Pistons are still the best team out East. And then you have a young Cavs team with LeBron out there right on their heels. So there's a lot of stuff going on at that time. But you are correct. That trade really, you know, changed the NBA. It changed the Celtics franchise as a whole on the front end and the back end. Very good point there.
2020 Hall of Fame class. It is epic. It is legendary. And I believe you and I agree it is the best of all time up to this particular time with where we're at right now. Jameson Welsh, NBA analyst. Jameson, it is always a pleasure to get you on the show. Hopefully you're staying safe. And I know we'll have more conversations in the very near future.
Not a problem. Thanks for having me as always. Definitely appreciate it.
Fun conversation on NBA basketball. Again, the 2020 Hall of Fame class with Jameson Welsh. We got a break for just a moment. More Drive Time Sports coming up. We'll close out this Monday edition of the show in just a moment.
I understand you're a real sports fan.
Well, then there's only one answer.
Turn on the radio. You'll never have to compromise again.
You're listening to Drive Time Sports with Jordan Buscarini on KOAL 107.3 FM at 750 AM.
Back to put the final touches on this edition of Drive Time Sports. Fun show today, talking a lot of basketball. Tomorrow, we're going to bring back a Football Tuesday. A lot to talk about in the NFL. We'll talk about the All-Decades team. We'll also talk about some of the moves in free agency now that that has settled down. Also, the NFL draft, because the draft is going to happen, but it's going to be all virtual. And the NFL talked about this today. Fully virtual draft. The NFL set out a memo that the league and club facilities will remain closed indefinitely to ensure that the NFL is in compliance. Team personnel will be advised to be in separate locations using phone and internet to communicate. This is fascinating, isn't it? It's the latest adjustment in how the NFL is going to have to make some maneuvers to officially get this draft off and rolling. Boy, we were talking about one of the most elaborate drafts ever. This thing was going to be at the Bellagio. It was going to be on the water. When a kid was drafted, he was going to arrive to the podium via boat. Now we're talking about everything being virtual. And I'm curious to see how the NFL will at least try to implement some sort of structure for malfunction. I mean, look, we've all had virtual fantasy drafts, right? Every year, I participate in a fantasy baseball draft. It lasts 8 hours. All of us are in different areas of the country, and at some point in time, something goes wrong. It's the internet. It's electronics. Something will go wrong at this NFL draft, but I think it's fascinating. And we always have a live draft show here on KOAL. I don't know if that's going to be possible this year. I don't know if there's going to be a live podium feed with Roger Goodell. I don't know how that is going to work, so stay tuned for that. But nonetheless, the NFL is doing everything they can to maneuver forward. All virtual. The entire draft is going to be virtual. And I'll do a little bit more research on this, but I heard rumblings of EA Sports doing some sort of virtual presence for the players that would be drafted. And then a portion, they would receive some sort of, I guess, compensation, and they could donate it to a charity. We'll talk more about that. But the NFL draft is going to continue. There's just some major adjustments that will be made. We are out of time on this edition of the show. We'll be back to do it again tomorrow. Again, it'll be Football Tuesday right here on Drive Time Sports. Be safe. I am out.